Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
What's up? Hello, people.
And Justin Robert Young.
Yo, this is Justin Robert Young.
Man, I was ready for a fat bass drop after that. I was ready for a beat to come in. I was ready for booty shorted dancers to come in by.
Man, that's I'm in the booty shorted dancer capital of North Carolina, Eden.
Where in Ohio is that exactly?
That's Southern Ohio.
Okay, got it.
Gentlemen, I have an opportunity for you.
What is it?
You guys been watching Daredevil? You like it?
Yeah, I'm trying real hard to catch up. I'm assuming you've already finished, right?
No. I'm not trying to binge watch it. I enjoy every one, and I don't want to just rush right through and be like, it's like I love Game of Thrones because I get that one episode a week to mull over, you know, as much as to be like, I want to watch it all. Appreciate it, savor it.
Well, and so the weird thing is I find myself rewatching Daredevil as we tried to get Neshcom really excited about it. So I rewatched episode 2. I wanted to experience episode 4 first from the experience as of a blind person only listening to it because they have that new descriptive track, which is amazing. It's like it turns it into an audiobook. And in fact, Bonnie has experienced most of the episodes of Daredevil with her phone in her pocket listening to the descriptive audio track and experiencing it as a radio drama. And then I went back.
Really?
And I went back and watched it again to notice the difference. I spent all this time not knowing what the two Russian brothers looked like because I experienced that whole thing while I was riding my bike. And so now I'm up to episode 8 or maybe. Yeah, I think I'm at episode 8 now.
We're not here for a Daredevil discussion.
Sorry about that.
We're here for a discussion about superpowers.
Oh, good. Okay.
So, do you guys want superpowers?
Heck yeah, I do.
Yeah, man. No, I love superpowers. They're great.
So here's my offer to you. How would you like to have, I don't know, be as strong as 5 men?
In. Wait, okay. five me's or 5 real men?
5 men. 5 five
yeah,
burly
soldiers
men.
Or cops or whatever. You're strong as 5 of them.
That would definitely be the genie gambit, right? It's now you are the power of 5, Gilbert Godfrey.
So would you like that? It's we're all for super strength, right?
Yeah.
Maybe a bit more alert, just I'm alert.
Oh, dude. I recently, for reasons we'll discuss later, I recently discovered some of the limitations of my senses, and I'm embarrassed. I'm aging, and I'm falling apart.
It's disgusting, Brian.
Yeah.
We want to be alert. Okay, and maybe if you're Superman and you fly, you got to feel pretty good, right? You're like, I'm flying, right?
Sure. Why not?
Maybe a little euphoria. You know, a little bit.
Yeah, sure. You're really excited about it, man.
Can I confess something? We took the kids to Six Flags, and there's a Superman ride roller coaster. It's they license the Superman name, and they throw it on there, and they put a statue of Superman halfway
through. It's not the Nietzsche Superman.
Yeah, exactly. But, oh, wow, that would be a different ride altogether, wouldn't it? But we went 3 times over the course of the day, and one of those times I totally, because the thing is your feet dangle down, you're not really seated in a coaster, but I totally pretended I was Superman, and once you enter that, it's it really felt like you were flying, and it was really fun.
Is all the color drained from it, and there's no humorous moments?
Burn. Sick burn, Snyder.
So you want to be euphoric. You want to be like this. None of this brooding. Woo, I got superpowers, man. No, you want to be excited, right?
Well, of course. Yeah.
So we're all go, right?
Yeah. No, I'm in. I've already stepped inside the chamber. Justin and I are just press the button right now, Andrew. Don't worry about it.
Well, the good news is you don't need a chamber, guys, to have this these powers. And you can vape it. You can inject it. You can snort it. And it's natural. I want you to know this is natural.
Are we talking okay. about...
So what you're saying here is I can roll down to my local vape shop and vape something for which gives me the power of five men. Is it legal?
You know, I think Bruce Banner was probably doing experiments that were not quite legal.
All right, let me ask you this. Is it...
aren't legal.
Is it methamphetamine?
A spaceship in Kansas is not legal.
No, real quick, when you're talking about...
military grade equipment through Gotham is not legal.
Now, when you're talking about the strength of five men, this isn't some illusion, right? This is...
Star ever filed for an FAA permit to fly?
No, he didn't. He was super legal. He was extra legal. When you say the strength of five men, like that's a measured fact. We're not like self-deluding ourselves. It's not like we had a dream that we were real strong or something.
No, I mean, when we say the strength of five men, I mean, it might mean like five cops tried to hold you down.
You're just too strong for them.
Yeah. You know, so.
So you could do that spot that they do in wrestling where the really big guy, like nine people, like gather around him and then they like throw him off and everybody falls down. Like that's what we're kind of looking at in terms of the strength of five men.
Yeah, as they start to tase you and try to cuff you, yes.
But okay, you're just like unstoppable.
If it's not, what's the difference between this and meth?
It's not meth. And let's be honest, meth people aren't known for like superhuman strength, like angel dust or something.
But they do have the power of like really clean rooms, like just fastidious as hell. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Teeth, not so much.
I'll tell you what, man, there's a zero unpopped zits on meth heads. Yeah.
So let me read you this description. This is from Forbes, all right? I mean, this is by a medical doctor. Well, it's MD after his name, unless his parents gave him a really weird, you know, last name. Okay. A man rushes out of his house in Miami last month, ripping his clothes off in a rage, screaming violently after smoking a crystal-like drug. Forget that part, okay? Five police officers are required to take him down as he exhibits superhuman strength. He's sweating, paranoid, delusional, and hallucinating about seeing objects in front of him. Or was he seen into another dimension? Let's be honest here, maybe.
I mean, we're open-minded on this podcast, right? We don't judge. I mean, who are we to say they're not, you know, witnessing things that we would never be able to grok with our mortal primate minds?
Imagine the police reports around Dr. Strange's house.
Yeah, right? I bet they call him a meth head.
Yeah, crazy other stuff.
Synthetic chemicals and arcane symbols abound.
I love the new Doctor Strange movie with Benedict Cumberbatch. There's just this reoccurring gag where he's getting defensive about not being a meth head. Like, and I don't smoke meth.
The behavior described above, known as excited delirium. That sounds good. Excited delirium. How was the party last night?
I mean, it's
night,
better
guys?
Than the bored as hell delirium.
Yeah. I mean, I could be a kindergarten teacher and describe how is excited delirium. Oh, that's wonderful. Okay.
Dude,
described as excited delirium is the result of emerging use of a new synthetic amphetamine-like stimulant that is similar to the compound contained in bath salts, also known as cathinones. The drug is called Flocka. And if you are the parent of a teen, it's important to educate yourself about this new designer drug.
All right.
All right.
I mean, so, at what point, okay, as drug makers get squirrelier and squirrelier, figuring out how to adulterate or pull in more and more chemicals to be within the legal confines of the law, like at some point, don't you just turn to your kid and be like, just do whatever, just do natural, real drugs. I mean, it's like, don't snort VHS tape cleaner.
What are natural, real drugs, like heroin?
Yeah, dude, yes, just please, anything, but I mean, it's like you're chasing, I don't know, this, the, like legal XY, synthetic XY or whatever, that stuff terrifies the hell out of me. And it's like, if my kids are, he says very quietly in case they're inside of your shot. I mean, I don't know. That all I'm saying is that's complicated. I'd hate to have three girls right about now.
Yeah. Well, wait. It feels like you were going down the path of I would rather them do like simpler drugs. Like that's the bargain you want to make. Is,
I mean, you know, I certainly wouldn't say that on a reported on a recorded podcast going out to tens of thousands of people all over the world.
Yeah. But I could, like, theoretically, if I were Brian Brushwood living in Austin, Texas with three daughters, I could say I'd prefer that you did drugs with a safer track record.
Wow, so that's something you said. Definitely you said that.
Let me continue.
Yep.
So the flaca, which is actually produced in the Middle East and Somalia, which if you ever seen Somali privates, pirates, doesn't look like they're using it. But. So it comes from there, and, you know, of course, now they're making the synthetics. And, you know, they're, like, you know, there are some side effects.
Oh, jeez. Are we about to
rapidly elevate to highs 105 to 106 degrees, triggering a cascade of events, which could also lead to kidney damage, failure as a result of rapid amylosis. Breakdown, that's where the muscle begins to break down, release a chemical called CPK, which causes kidney damage. The physiological effects trigger severe anxiety, paranoia, delusions, go to a psychotic state characterized by a surge of violence associated with increased strength and a loss of awareness of reality.
Yeah, I'm sure there are side effects of being blasted by gamma radiation too, man.
Yeah,
you know?
So our hometown, Justin, Fort Otto Police Department, according to the Sun Sentinel, is creating a specialized force loosely known as the FLACA Initiative to work with local agencies, the DEA, ATF, and others to pursue this. So,
dude, I don't want to step into this quagmire, but all I could think of in my mind is this sounds an awful lot like those horrific images of crocodile. Like you can't unsee that decayed flesh tissue, and you can't unwrap your mind around. You guys have seen that, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's so. They've decided to create a website to educate people about the warning signs of this.
Yeah. Are the warning signs the strength of five men?
Yeah, I mean the potential effects and all that. It's they list it here at don'tbeaguineapig.com, which goes straight to a GoDaddy holding page.
Well, okay. Is their point that it's experimental? I mean, are they kind of saying what I'm saying, which is like stick to the tried and true known safer drugs?
Well, I mean, but this is not new. I mean, like there are certainly probably more pervasive in today's day and age. But designer drugs, I remember being a thing when I was in high school, oh, so many years ago. The idea that, you know, you want that there are like, oh, these. This hip new thing called ecstasy you need to be aware of.
And ice.
part of the goal of synthetic drugs is one is you're trying to, one, circumvent detection methods. You're trying to circumvent, you know, restrictions on certain ingredients. And so you're trying to do that. And, you know, like anything else, it's like every year we get a new iPhone, we get a new version of Android. You know, this year's exactly. New designer drug. You know, walking down the catwalk, Flacca.
So
exactly. He's got the strength of five men.
You know, and the reviewers are like really disappointed. They were hoping for the strength of six men. You know, it's really more of an incremental upgrade than it is a revolutionary one.
The diminishment of auditory hallucinations was good. I'm for that. I like that.
So what happens? I want to couch a real life decision that I made in my life with a fictional decision. The fictional decision is what happens if somebody creates legitimately the perfect drug, like across the board. You live 10% longer, you see 10% better, you feel 10%, we'll say 30% more euphoric, and you know, all these things. And there really is legitimately, as far as medical science knows, no downside or side effect. Or let's say they're marginal side effects. Like, you know,
so we'll talk about alcohol, go ahead.
Well and actually what I was thinking of as far as the real life analog is caffeine, because in caffeine there's articles that say, you know, it's like on the one hand, you definitely are more productive under caffeine. Mm-hmm. And as a lifestyle choice, you will get more done and you will derive a socioeconomic benefit from deciding to do caffeine. Now, I gave up caffeine for 2 years and I noticed that I had put on like 2 or 3 pounds. I was thicker in the neck and I was just The upside of it was when I performed. Thank you, Andrew.
Now all I can imagine is Brian wrapping a little tape measure around his neck and just
you just see
the pinch mark and saying,
I mean, you could tell from the photos and stuff, but like the upside was when I performed magic, even if I was nervous, I very rarely got the trembly fingers. But then at some point I decided to start doing caffeine again. I was just like, I don't like how thick I am. I don't like my lack of energy. I don't like how down I am. And so I started it up again, and it made me think that caffeine is one of the few drugs that universally has a downside. There's a definite downside to caffeine. There are physiological problems with deciding to do it. And yet, as a society, we're cool with it in ways that we're obviously not cool with this new one.
Well, it's like, you know, the degree of effect and the amount of moderation. I just went a week and a half without caffeine. It's like, oh, let me see if I can do this. And I didn't go through any withdrawal. I wasn't there like, oh, I gotta have it. You know, I was like, end of the week, I'm like, yeah, I miss it. I miss the taste of my Diet Coke and went back to it. But I just said, oh, okay, I can walk away anytime, guys. And I limit my caffeine intake, you know, to earlier in the day now. I don't have it later at night. So I think that, yeah, there's certain things work well in degrees, other things not so much. And that becomes, you can only consume so much caffeine before consuming more caffeine is really painful and you don't want to consume it. And that's it's self-inhibiting in that way.
Well, sure. So I guess my question is, in the theoretical discussion about designer drugs, like, do you think that in our lifetime we're going to see, there's kind of like this big six, right? You got what? You got nicotine, caffeine, marijuana, alcohol, cocaine, and heroin, right?
Netflix.
Those are the big guys.
Yeah. And then Netflix too. Yeah.
And then Netflix, right? Are we going to see a new entry into that category, and will it be legal or illegal in our lifetime?
I mean, I guess it depends.
Oh, psychedelics, they say in the chat. That's a good point.
Yeah. I think that another, a big area, the biggest, the thing that we need the most to combat is we do need something that helps with obesity. We need something that helps, that speeds up metabolisms or helps people in a way that will not be too destructive. But the biggest, that is one of the biggest consistent problems we have is that we're not designed for this environment of having this much available food and calories. We solved food. We solved the most critical, important problem of survival readily, to where people in the lowest income level have the biggest problem, not in caloric consumption and undercount consumption, but overconsumption. And we could get into debate about quality or whatever and availability, which is just food deserts are a myth, relatively speaking. And given choices, people make bad choices. So,
what if there's a drug called temperance that it's like you took it and it's like you're like, that's enough quarter chat. I only ate half my quarter pounder.
They do have it. That's one of the things they have for like if you're trying to like they have like appetite suppressants are a thing. And I think that, you know, where you want to find something that probably the best thing you can do is you can look at somebody who has biologically has a well metabolism. Like I know a girl who's, you know, she's super fast metabolism. She weighs 95 pounds. She can eat as much as I do, and she looks great, but she's also going to burn it off, whatever. Whatever you can do to get that metabolism and give it to somebody else. And we can talk all in all. We can talk as much about, oh, it's willpower. Like, willpower is a real thing, but if your biology is pushing you one way, it takes a lot more willpower to get you that other way.
No, and that definitely, I mean, we've been playing this game for 5 years, and I can definitely look at myself 5 years ago and be all like, my metabolism's not the same as 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people are born with different ones. And that's a thing that is, it's frustrating because, you know, I have friends who are very fit and athletic and they look at people who are not and like, ugh. I'm like, listen, I think willpower is real. Like, you make a choice. Every time I snap into a Slim Jim, every time I put a Red Vine into my mouth, I am making a choice. I am a sentient human being making a choice. For some people, that ability, it's a lot easier for them to say, nah, than others. And how we get to there, I think, is going to be a very interesting area in, you know, drug research.
So wait, so if you were to say that there's one field in that list that Brian named, like, that would be what? The goal of something like that?
I think he's right.
Like, appetite suppressants now are usually like methamphetamine based, right? Like, isn't that the
thing? Yeah, I don't mean an appetite suppressant. That's
It could be, well, it sounded to me, if I'm understanding you right, Andrew, you would include, metabolism altering drugs, or, we hear about brown fat.
People point out microbiome transplants, and the bacteria in your stomach can affect a lot about in your body can affect a lot about your diet. And it might not be a multi-part solution, but I think that is, if you're going to say what's going to be the accepted thing, I think it's going to be the thing that's going to, you want to increase your ability, your willingness to be more active too, because it's not just a matter of keeping calories off, it's exercise and it's getting out and it's doing stuff and helping people, who are people who have these, better lifestyles. And again, it's so much of it. You meet people who are professional fitness trainers, and they're all the same. They were all the same people in high school. They're all the same all along. They were the people doing track. They were doing all these different sports year round. These were people who were like that. And they go and try and teach us how to be like this. And it's like the person naturally gifted at math.
Well, no. And more importantly, it's like the reason they're like that is because they love it. They get a genuine high out of being physically active. And it's like they feel bad if they're not dropping and doing a push-up every 5 minutes or whatever. So it's like it's not comparable if you're somebody who doesn't love that activity.
Yeah, if you put me in a room with a blank sheet of paper and a pen and let me spend 5 hours writing down ideas, I love it.
Yeah, people, that's prison. Literally, prison. Exactly.
So I think that's going to be the idea is to we find these little hacks and ways to try to do stuff, and we find ways like, oh, well, we can give you steroids, which will cause this, whatever. But, Brian and I, we both know, we can put on muscle, but we don't keep muscle the same way guys who are very naturally muscle bound are. And it's just it's a different kind of thing. Like, the Timothy Ferris book, like the 4 hour, diet, whatever, here's how to put. I did like his version of that, like eating steak and all this stuff, and I put on 20 pounds of muscle and what got big, and it was a hell of a lot of work for me to stay that way. Once I stopped eating like that, I could keep working out, but shrink.
So one of the things I like about your suggestion that this is the realm where we'll accept a big drug is because right now the number one health threat is obesity. So it's like the problem with drugs in general is that there's always a trade-off, right? Whether it's a trade-off in productivity, whether it's a trade-off in the perception of free will, whether it's a trade-off of, class warfare or whatever, that's what makes society uncomfortable with it. But with obesity being such a number one thing, if it's a thing, and by the way, it's fascinating to know that essentially diet pills of two or three decades ago really were just meth when it was legal. And people were like, oh, well, let's just do a little meth and do a little housework and pop a little zits. at any rate, I do think that a metabolism-altering chemical would be acceptable to society here's the question. I would say as certainly acceptable as long as it doesn't feel good. But what if there was like a strong euphoria that came with it? Is there some kind of society shame that we have with that people would shut it down?
No, I think that would be necessary, especially if it came with a lifestyle change component and you had to be slightly more active than you were otherwise. Like it has to come with its own I'm happy about this sort of reward. The big test would be if there is a huge bill to be paid. I think it would be fine if it makes you happy. It's obviously going to be incredibly successful and world changing if it works. But if, and with those two things ticked off, it buys itself X amount of like, all right, well, also every once in a while you have a hard time getting to sleep or something like that. Like, okay, I could see that being a trade-off. But if it's like, you break out in hives or you grow a horn, like obviously you're not going to do it.
So you think there does need to be a downside in order for society to accept
it? I think that's I feel like we could, and maybe I'm just inventing this and, but like there are drugs that could do the upside of what we're talking about in research or that's on the radar of medical science now. I'll bet you that the problem is there's just the downsides are too hard. They're not something that either would pass FDA regulations or that would be commercially viable.
There's another side, real quick, just to speculate wildly. I you know, if we're talking about drugs, where there's a lot of preconceived notions in Western society about various drugs, but it seems to me like you could engineer a class of food that, you know, was felt super fatty, or I guess we already have that. You know, you got the Olestra and all that kind of crap.
But yeah, there's been a lot of approaches. You know, one of the biggest things that's helped a lot in some cases is gastric bypass surgery, because you have people who get so used to consuming so much food, it is hard for them to feel full. And you know, the idea that that can help some people. And then, but the problem is that, like any other, when food's an addiction, when you're trying to do it to fill some other thing or time, it can help, but then you can fall back into your habits and it can get very, very worse. But I've seen several people who've had really, really, really good results, you know, with the gastric bypass surgery, and it helps to an extent. It doesn't make them super skinny because they still have to deal with these other, you know, compulsions towards food and the way they handle calories. But we see these, we see improvements. You know, LASIK is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful thing. You know, I had LASIK years ago and my vision is still fantastic. It's 20/20. And, you know, we get in, you hear the argument, oh, they want to cure anything. Like, well, you know, the eyeglass industry let this one slip by.
Yeah. Since we're talking about superpowers and we're talking about ways to experience superpowers, can I suggest a topic for you guys?
No, Brian.
Sure. What about, we talked about, you know, you with the drug, you feel like you have the strength of five men because you can fight off five police officers. You feel invincible because you're high. You feel euphoric. Did you read this week's article about inducing the feeling of being truly invisible? Did you see this? Oh, I'm so excited. You guys
I saw the headline. I did not read it.
Okay. So you know the experiment where they set up, they make you feel like a mannequin arm is your arm by setting up a mirror. And then they brush your hand as they brush the mannequin arm. And after a while, your brain, you know, smooths out the wrinkles and what it's seeing. And it says, oh, that must be your arm. And then they smash it with a hammer and you have this big disconnect or whatever. Using Oculus VR stuff. I'll go ahead and show you the article. They set up a mannequin body, and they do the same thing. They stroke your belly with a brush, and they stroke the belly of the mannequin at the same time. So you're wearing this Oculus, looking down, and what you're seeing is the body of the mannequin being brushed, but at the same time, you feel your belly being brushed, and so you know, after a while, smooth out the wrinkles and decide that you're feeling it, and then after a while, they remove the mannequin, but they continue to brush air. So you look down, and because you're seeing things through the mannequin's point of view, which is now just a helmet suspended over nothing, they're brushing air, but you feel it on your belly. And then of course, because they're evil psychiatrists, they pull out a knife and stab air and freak you out.
This is one step below, like, Jigsaw in Saw. Like, this is terrible. This is not something that we should be rewarding.
This is fascinating to me because it makes me wonder how much we really want superpowers. For the three of us, we grew up reading comics and we really wanted to be superheroes. But as simulations get better and better, like 90, 95%, 98, 99% of what we want to get out of having superpowers, people are going to be able to have a takeaway through these simulations.
I guess it depends on why you wanted superpowers. My reasons were different.
my reasons were just to feel it. Your reasons were to actually do good for society.
Brian.
No, those were not Andrew's reasons. Andrew wants superpowers for the same reason that he wants, you know, heavy duty equipment. You know, like, it's just it is a utility and a means to an end.
All I'm saying is, I think William Fisk would make a great mayor of New York and potentially a candidate in 2016 for president.
Wilson Fisk? Yeah. Wilson, no, sure. I'll buy it. He seems real sensitive. He seems like a real down-to-earth guy.
Very much.
Who do you think has a better shot of winning if they were both legitimate candidates? Chris Christie or the Kingpin?
Oh, dude. I mean, kind of look one of the same. It's actually, I hadn't really seen that parallel until just now.
So, yeah. No, I think, you know, superpowers are cool until everybody else gets them, and it's like, great, you know. Like right now. So I got, I don't know if you know, oh, what time is it? Oh, it's Apple Watch time. So
hey, can we real quick, please tell us, because both Justin and I are on the Apple Watch hype train. We're both getting
them.
Let me
see your watches. Let me see your watches, guys.
I got an old crappy Pebble. Look at that.
It's not. Yeah.
Oh, hold on. Oh. Wait a minute. My microphone is hiding.
I was told that I was going to get my watch like May or whatever, late May. I think Justin had an earlier estimated delivery date than I did.
No, so, mine's like the first week of June was the.
Oh, yeah. Because you went and ordered the Space Gray and everybody did that.
Because only drug dealers buy the white band
and hookers.
It's called China White. There's a reason they named the band that color.
Yeah. So I order it, and then I got that late. I'm like, well, you know, that'll be a nice May thing to do. And then I got the update like, hey, your Apple Watch is going to be delivered Friday.
Oh. So before we went live, we talked about the different reasons that people are getting into the Apple Watch. And for me, you know, the Pebble has been a known quantity, and I absolutely adore it for the tracking and for the, you know, getting messages and stuff. That's what I love about it. And you were mentioning that other people, for them, it's the fitness that's going to do it. What is it that gave you Apple Watch fever?
The hope that I would get it before Justin and I could rub it in his face.
Oh, God, I hate you. Oh, God. God, it's the worst.
So the thing that, like, you know, watching the demo, and we talk, you know, Brian, you made a very good point that unlike other Apple products, it's not like there's this clear. I mean, I would say that iPod was obviously music.
Right. It was. They had a very clear statement, 1,000 songs in your pocket, right?
Because it could do. Yeah. You know, one thing.
Correct.
And then the iPhone was like, hey, phone.
Internet communicator, best iPod ever.
You know, and then you get iPad was where it got a little bit. People like, why would I use that instead of a laptop? That was a hazy thing for people. And that was, there was an argument that iPad needed a clear case study, where I looked at it originally and I wanted a better Kindle. You know, I wanted a better Kindle that I could surf the web on. And instead, I got this magical gateway into a whole other wonderful universe. But I use mine differently than other people. But that got into that sort of, because it does so many more things, that's where it starts to get kind of nebulous. And it's kind of like somebody saying, why should I buy a computer? And you're like, if I have to tell you why I buy it, it may not work for you. And then so with this, and I see the Apple Watch being good, by the way, for Pebble, because I think that some people might be like, you know what? I like this. I don't need this other stuff. And I love the idea that Pebble will last 7 days. You know, I think Apple Watch will probably be very much the clear-cut biggest single seller of it. But I think that we're going to see a lot of other competing devices in there following their own pathways. And I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, actually, I'm getting both the Apple Watch, and I've already pledged for the Pebble Time Steel, and we'll wait until I get both. But my theory is I actually got the fancier band for the Pebble Time Steel because of the 7-day battery life, and because right now my current Pebble, I pretty much only enjoy the benefits of the alerts coming up. So if that's what I'm going to do, I figure that'll be my day-to-day work week, nicer looking watch that goes with a dress shirt or whatever. And then the Apple Watch, because of its specific fitness tracking ability, that's going to be my gym watch that I wear to get specific details on, you know, my swim workout. And of course I got triathlon fever right now.
But at the same time, the difference with the watch, in where it is very much more like the iPad than it is the iPhone or the iPod, is that it's a very personal device. Like the idea of a watch is a very personal thing. So I think there would be a danger. And there has been, if you just look at the sales data, on single use, very understandable fitness trackers or, you know, watches and stuff like that just kind of tell time, you know, beyond what you would see, you know, for like big high end fashion watches. There's a reason why they've kind of fallen out of favor as just a general, let me tell the time utility.
And I've said this before, the thing that excites me the most about it is, you know, there are already 3,000 apps on it. I started playing around with different stuff, and there are things that I like. There are things that I like on my phone that I actually like better on my Apple Watch. One of the things I love is an app called Numerous, which is great for tracking things. So I can pull that up and I can pull up, let's say, you know, when's the next SpaceX launch? You know, when's these things? And so having those things just right on my watch are really cool. The idea of, like, you know, having my directions on the watch,
let me pull up
the maps and just to have that. The calendar, you know, just the quick, you know, here's the calendar, here's what's going on, you know, my everything I have to do. Those things are nice. You know, looking up, they do New York Times and LA Times has their little stock, or excuse me, their little one sentence headlines. You know, Instagram is fun on it because it's just, let me do a really quick thing. Let me not just dive really deeply into it and I can see what's going on. So the idea of taking, you know, what was, you know, Google Now and Apple Glances and those things and putting it into that format for there is useful. There's, you know, the games they're coming out with that are very interesting too, because you get it in the idea of, you know, they have one, you know, several of these interactive kind of games where, you know, something pops up and it's like you're interacting with somebody who says they're a spy and you send them on missions, and hours later you come back with something else you have to tell them or whatever. There's a lot of that little, like, just the micro attention sort of like, oh, that's cool. I the thing that I really want is to have a I'd love to have like little comics, XKCD and stuff. That's the thing I'm looking forward to, is just an app that I can just pull up. Oh, that's funny, you know.
Or like at a particular time every day, it's like it's 10 o'clock. Here's the 3-panel comic from X, Y, or Z that you get, and you just swipe, swipe, swipe. You're like, oh, momentary amusement. That's great.
Yeah,
but I think like what's really interesting, and you know, Andy and Otko made a point that, you know, like today and over the weekend, there's going to be, you know, the loud breeze that you'll feel is the exhale from developers who developed these apps on the emulator that now see them on a regular watch and kind of have to start from scratch. This is a really interesting development challenge, because unlike the other devices, including the iPad, we have never had more or more sophisticated mobile apps for big screens, small screens. And so now the idea of not only figuring out whatever the learning curve of how people want to interact with these watches and kind of getting past that initial wave of like, oh, okay, well, we can do these things, but is it fun? Is it interesting? Is it something that people really want to do and you'll find a rewarding experience from? And then also figuring out, okay, we have a litany, a treasure trove of apps that people absolutely love. How do we figure out where people want to interact with that data in that smaller screen size? And like, this next 3 months is going to be amazingly experimental and fascinating.
So my favorite so far, Yelp. I open up Yelp, and all of a sudden, Yelp comes up with, it's a very simple, shows me, you got the, I can't see, I know. It's,
there we go. We see things. It. So there's four quadrants on your,
the
on
upper
your
left is restaurants. I press restaurants, and so It's already figuring out, well, I'm just going to use where you're at. I'm just going to do this stuff. I'm not going to ask you the same stuff I would on Android or on iOS. It's just like, I'm just going to go straight to, you know, what restaurants are near you. And so immediately it just pulls up the closest restaurant. So there's one 300 feet away from me. And so it's a streamline. If you're using this on your watch, we have a pretty good idea exactly what you want to do. Same with Uber. And I love the idea of, you know, it's just that, figure out, like, exactly if you're an app can be a button, what happens when you press that button? So if you're Yelp and you have a button, you press this button, what happens? We tell you a restaurant's near you. And you can do other – you can within that the Apple Watch, you can do other things. But with Uber, you press that Uber button. You probably want an Uber, and we're going to say, okay, here's Uber. If you want one, here's how far away it is. Press it now to get it.
That's the weird. On your recommendation, I just finished, you know, Becoming Steve Jobs. And one of the lessons from that book is that he figured out, you know, his greatest contribution to technology is that less can be more. Is that that throwing everything that you can do isn't necessarily always a good idea. And the idea that, you know, Yelp as an institution, of course, on a PC, it's a place for you to talk and give reviews. It's a place for you to interact. It's a place for you to resolve disputes. On your iPhone is a place for you to analyze all of that stuff. But on your wrist, it's just a single button that says, I'm hungry. Give me a place good enough right now.
That's open now. And that's what, you know, Yelp, when I look at my use case for Yelp, it really could be three buttons. You know, it might be a better experience for me with the three buttons that I normally hit whenever I'm in a strange city, which I find myself in very often. So it is amazing to see, like, how fast, I think, and that's part of Apple's bet, really, is that you know, this becomes something magic on your wrist development wise, you know, just in terms of the app, very quickly, as it has so much more of a head start than the iPhone or even the iPad did.
Well, and partly we are a trained populace in that this is a familiar echo of a dance that we've played, you know, three or four times. You know, certainly every generation of a new iPhone happens. But even, you know, these revolutionary changes, I mean, you're talking about the white hot electricity happening right now for developers. On the same side, there's an expectation, like, because we've all gone through this revolution before as consumers, we're expecting everything to get resolved. We're like, yeah, no, give it 20 minutes. I'm sure there'll be an app that does this thing that I picture wanting right now.
So I press one button.
Yeah.
And I press it's open.
Yeah.
Skittles.
For audio listeners, Andrew pressed his futuristic wristwatch and shouted Skittles.
And now, boys and girls.
Wait.
Children of all ages.
I want to see an actual rainbow come out of your friggin' wrist. Oh.
Wait, are now focusing.
Oh.
Can you buy Skittles from that? Is that what's happening?
It's hard to see, I know.
You have the webcam in your mouth.
Andrew, now.
That's the Amazon Prime app. I have not turned on purchasing, but if purchasing was turned on, I'd press one button, and then all of a sudden I would one-click buy Skittles from Amazon Prime to be delivered to me.
So
that's amazing.
All right, so can we side-jag into a situation that happened? The Radio Shack close to our local HEB closed, and as they do when things close, they just want to get their money back on everything. So they do 40 to 60% off of everything. So I walked in, and it was fairly – there was still a lot of stuff. I could tell that the Primo stuff was cleaned out that morning, and there definitely was one guy with a plastic bag just opening up individual shelves of resistors and just scooping them all in, buying everything. But you know, here in the studio, we've got, like, you know, mic cables and microphones and mic stands or whatever. And I'm like, 60% off. Surely that's competitive with online prices. I could buy some stuff and then I don't have to worry about it for later. Let me just impulse buy it right now. Every single item, not one item in that 60% off wonderland of a store closing, not one item was even close to its online price.
Yeah, the problem with that is you're really not buying it from Radio Shack looking to just make whatever they have off inventory. They sell their entire inventory to liquidation companies that really don't care whether, like, they attract people who look at liquidation sale and say, oh my God, I can go buy a bunch of really cheap stuff. And it's like, yeah, it's cheaper than it was the day before that the liquidation sale came in. But it's like you said, you know, especially in a world of Amazon Prime, if you're willing to wait 12 to 48 hours, you can pretty much have everything that you would otherwise buy for cheaper than at a liquidation sale.
You know, two things were interesting. I took a class on, like, marketing and business, and they explained basically how closeouts work and, like, how, like, an department store, you have your item and then you have it worth your first, you know, it's on the shelf for 6 weeks. It doesn't sell. Then you take 10% off for a week. It doesn't move. Then you do 20%. And then you do 30%. And finally, you move it over to some point. And then if it doesn't even move there, you throw it away or it goes off to someplace else. But the whole idea of the time, sort of, some people will buy it at this point. Some people will buy it here. Some people are never going to buy it. It's never going to sell. And it's that's how retail works. And, you know, you go to a Radio Shack and you look at how the costs are so much higher than Amazon, you realize, well, this is the price of rent. This is the price of having five people in one store that's going to have 30 visitors today. This is the, you know, two people working there. These are all the costs that you're paying for. And when you hear people talk about, well, Amazon's going to open stores, they're going to do something, but they're not going to open up stores because,
no.
You know, they're expensive. There's a reason why stores are closing. And there's certainly cases where special things, we have high enough margins, it makes it worthwhile. But it's not going to be worth, you know, sell you Amazon Basics ain't going to work it.
Yeah, I wonder. Is that a bad thing or a good thing? You know, in the short term, there's the known effect that you can see. You can point to the jobs lost. You could point to the entrepreneurs who, you know, bought franchises for Radio Shack and say like, this is really rough or whatever. Do you think much about like the unseen benefits of that stuff?
I think that sometimes there are, and then you sometimes will find yourself in a position where. You know, you're like, you know what? We do need to have stores for certain things, or we do want this. And, you know, using the Apple ecosystem is a great example of where Apple products, they produce it enough volume that can, you know, competitively, you know, people are like, oh, it's more expensive. I'm like, I don't know. When you look at the build quality, you're to find something the comparable build quality, it's going to cost around the same sort of price. And so, and there used to be more of a premium on that. But Apple makes these big, huge profits. But part of what they do is, you buy an iPhone, you get to go into an Apple store and say, I don't know how to work this. And they can pay for somebody there to do that. I can't get that with a Google product.
Correct.
You know, Google only makes $15 a year off of you. If you call somebody up on phone support and talk to them for 30 minutes, they've lost money on you.
Correct. Well, and also, you know, and this has been my experience. I'm sure somebody has a counterexample, but in my experience, you know, I get three words into the sentence, my headphones don't seem to, and they've already handed me a replacement pair of headphones, you know?
And I think that you look at, you know, like I try to buy from local magic shops when I need a magic item. And the problem I have with local magic shops is I go in there and I go, hey, what about this? They go, I don't know anything about it. Okay, now this is why I would go online to buy this, because to find out about it, I'm going to have to go sit in front of my computer, go to one of these magic forums, and I'll read about it. I'm not going to go back out to the magic shop to go buy this. And when you don't have that knowledge in store, when you don't know these things, a really good knowledgeable person, a really good salesperson could do this and then could help you and do that, and it gets to be a trade-off. And
well,
that's the
and I suspect we're entering an age of consumer awareness where they could even flatly say, hey, if price is an issue, you could probably save 20% doing it online. But if you buy it right now, you know, here's my personal cell phone, my name's Gary, I'll take care of you for whatever. And people would be like, let's go.
Yeah, and I'll pay. I'm always willing to walk into a magic shop and pay. I'll pay. I can get this stuff for free if I just email people, you know. But I will buy it in a magic shop. I'll pay somebody if they can tell me, you know, like, oh, yeah, I played it with this. I did this, or I talked. Like, that's great. I want to pay for that value. I'm willing to pay for that. But when you don't have that, and that applies to a lot of local things, you don't. And I think that that's, you know, sometimes you're always – and they're always going to run the risk in a magic shop. People are going to walk in there and go, oh, I can get it cheaper online. And it's like, well, yeah, but there are – you can create customers who – you want to cultivate customers like myself who I will pay for your knowledge. I'll pay for your experience because I appreciate that.
Yeah. Hey –
But that doesn't apply everywhere. That's a problem with bookstores is, you know, you can't expect somebody who works at a bookstore to know every single one of those damn books, and it's hard to compete with Amazon in pricing.
Agreed. And I suspect, I don't know, it's really weird to see the emerging world. There was a, I think it was on the You Are Not So Smart podcast. It was talking about the cognitive bias that happens when people search for answers to things in Wikipedia. It gives them a false sense of security of knowing how to do other stuff. And apparently we are a dying breed in that we are part of a generation that remembers what it was like to want to know the answer to a thing and to know to say, I'm trying to find the answer to this, to spend 6 hours looking for it and ultimately saying, I can't find the answer. I don't know this. Like, that's apparently a thing that's just going away.
Yeah, it's just not happening.
We get that all the time in debates where people are like, well, check this link out. Well, this person really summed this thing up. It's all meta, meta, meta. It's all this. And I've been guilty of that too. I've been like, oh no, so-and-so handled, like my authority here handled this.
Right.
Like, no, I don't have any real knowledge, but this guy does. And maybe I don't really have any real knowledge to know if they're really an authority. And that gets to be so frustrating. And it's not a way to have discourse. Saying I don't know is a wonderful thing. And can I tell you what I've been doing the last few days?
What?
Does it involve
your wristwatch?
No. So I'm very, very lucky. I'm a member of the Magic Castle here in Los Angeles. And both Justin and Brian have been there and have performed there. And It is – what's neat about the Magic Castle, it's this private club that has – it's right near Hollywood, right off of Hollywood Boulevard. It's up on the hillside. It looks like this, you know, kind of Harry Potter-esque thing from the outside. It's this old mansion, historic mansion that's been fitted into a club where they have shows every single night, 7 nights a week. They have a show, they have several showrooms, and – you can get invited, you know, a member can give you, you know, can invite you to there, whatever. Anybody
can. And by the way, it's legit. Like, you could tell this thing's got so much history and so much weird stuff. I remember one of the most magical moments. They don't close off any parts of the building, regardless of how, let's say it's a light Monday night or something like that. I remember wandering down into the basement, you know, looking at all these unused showrooms where you could tell close-up rooms would, you know, performances would be happening on a Friday night. And I heard a crowd around the corner, and I remember walking around that corner and then hearing shh, 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 and then the crowd vanishing, and I walked in and there's just nobody there, and it's like, that is a performance specifically for somebody snooping around on a slow night, and it's the whole place is filled with adorable stuff. Yeah. Like that,
one thing they have which I absolutely love is they've got a library run by, they've got two fantastic librarians there, Lisa and Bill, who look after this, and they've got, you know, people have donated books, thousands and thousands of books. There are thousands of books, and you're not going to find a greater collection of magic books outside of probably David Copperfield's warehouse, you know, or some crazy collector somewhere. And it's all, if you're a member, I can go online, I can go look up, see what books are there, what videos are there. Every instructional video they, by the way, they have, every instructional magic DVD they have is actually available on computer. So you can sit down there and say, oh, I want to look up the history of the dancing handkerchief. And I can pull up every video where somebody's taught something on it. Or if I look for books, turn around and go through the stacks. And it's you know, being in that environment and doing research is very different than sitting at home and doing it. And being at home and going doing research on YouTube is wonderful. But then you also, if it's a video before 2005 and nobody uploaded it, you know, there's a world out there. And I was doing research into a magic trick, and I found a thing that's attributed to one person, very, very heavily argumented, like, this guy did it. And then I found 10 years earlier a little pamphlet that describes this method, and like, oh, this is interesting. Not to invalidate what this other person contributed to, but like, no, this thing existed before. And then I dig into that, and I'm like, oh, wow, there's a whole other history here. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
If only every town had, like, I don't know, something like that, a place you could go to where you could just
where there's like a collection of information.
Materials, yeah.
And maybe like a specialist who's like really good at helping you find the knowledge that you seek. Like, you could walk
Dare
up
to dream.
And, yeah.
That would be pretty awesome.
Hey, man, we're at 52 minutes. You guys want to talk picks?
Let's do picks.
I got a pick.
What is it?
So we talked all last week. Which, by the way, next week, I know people have been sending in like crazy their UFO stories, and we have a great doc that NeshCon put together that we will definitely go through next week. Because I think there's some great stuff in there.
I'm gonna go straight to UFO country in Oregon next week for that.
What?
Oh, awesome.
So we talked a lot about Star Wars last week.
Who did we?
I, of course, said they came out on digital a couple weeks before that. Downloaded Star Wars, all three of them. Put two of them on my phone. The other one is having a hard time downloading. I'm on my second go-round of watching A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, just killing time on flights. Empire Strikes Back. Let me just talk for a second. My pick's Empire Strikes Back.
This is when... both Andrew and I sort of fade to the background, just clapping to the rhythm of the beat while you take your solo dance.
I mean, here's what you need to know about Empire Strikes Back.
Andrew tries to find a new pick.
Andrew's literally running around trying to find a new pick. Was that your pick? That's right. Keep going, Justin. You got the spotlight. Ignore him.
Here's the thing about Empire Strikes Back. It is... as a script, it's really weird. Like, it almost defined not only what is a good, what is an interesting script in terms of its storytelling wise, but what is the perfect sequel. Like, if by the end of it, you know, there are through lines, but the characters really don't have tremendous journeys. You know, that they're not, that they're degrees different than they are at the beginning of the story, but it's not like it is in A New Hope, where, you know, the scoundrel who shoots somebody in cold blood at the beginning risks his life and his business, you know, to save a kid he just met, or, you know, the whiny farm boy, you know, becomes the hero of the universe. There's degrees, and yet it's so compelling. It's so amazing. And there are things that happen in that movie that I think we would laugh at in just if you took it out. You know, the fact that, like, you hear Obi-Wan Kenobi in you know, Force VO.
The fact that he shows up as a translucent ghost waving his hands.
He shows up as Exposition the Ghost. So it was just like, you need to go somewhere in the second act, Luke. And right? He's like, oh my God, okay. And he's like, all right, see you later.
That's amazing, because you're right. There's zero irony in The Empire Strikes Back. Everything is
presented. Burning Bush is talking to me.
I know. It's, but
cool,
like,
take me seriously.
But it's so amazing. Like, the storytelling and the art in how they do stuff. I mean, that script, every scene has a cliffhanger. Every scene has a thing that moves you on to the next one, that, like, it has such a propulsion that you don't even realize, unless you watch it three times on an airplane, you know, that, like, oh my God, there's so little linear sense to, like, oh, we're on a snow planet. Now we're getting chased by a space worm. And now we're introducing these characters, and, like, with 30 minutes left in the movie, that we're going to have play these major roles. And, like, the Lando character, the real estate he gets to have us care about him, betray our main characters, and then...
Spoiler alert.
yeah, I know. Sorry. And then... you know, redeem himself at the end is minuscule. He has so little time to do it. And yet by the end, when you know, he's when Chewie's got his hands around his neck, and he's like, no, we can do this. And, like, you know, we can try and save Han. You're like, oh, that's great. He isn't just a piece of crap opportunist. Like, he does care about his friend. It's so well done. It is exceptional. It's my pick.
Well, and it's funny. And of course, you and I, all three of us, are inextricably linked to our childhoods with the action figures. And if I'm writing a movie, a scene where they just parade out a line of bounty hunters just for the privilege of saying no disintegrations so that they could sell toys later, I'd be like, no, that's dumb. Don't do that. That doesn't advance the plot. You're just selling toys. I hate everything about this idea in theory. And yet, that 8-second chunk is, like, one of my favorite parts of all of Empire, because I'm like, IG-88, Bosk. You know, it's like, I know all of them. Yeah, exactly. Dengar, yeah. Yeah, you're so right. It's like, I would say it would never get made today, and yet, fingers crossed, you know, this
I'm going
to
defend the bounty hunter scene too, though, because what my pick, I'm going to get to my pick now. My pick is Star Wars, and I do call it Star Wars, not A New Hope, because it was originally released as Star Wars and not Episode 4, by the way.
That's right. The opening crawl did not say Episode 4, A New Hope.
It gets lost down the memory hole that the first revision was, I'm going to call it Episode 4 now. Anyhow, regardless, Star Wars, New Hope. Okay.
By the way, if we're given Star Wars picks, my picks is the original trailers for the original Star Wars. Just how weird that crap was.
Brian, I'm doing my pick right
sorry,
now.
Sorry.
One of the things I love about, and I, like Justin, I've been rewatching him, and what I've been doing is I'm watching maybe 15 minutes of time, and it's built on that cliffhanger structure. So you got to watch this bit, and then this bit, and this bit. And what I love is that the bits inside of there where it is such a real, and again, I know people who've never seen it and go watch it today, its pacing is different. Its pacing is different. It's weird, and it feels very 70s in some things, but it also felt like another planet. It really felt like another world. The way they went to locations, I don't feel like at any time, oh, they're in a pipe factory in England right now. Like, oh yeah, no, this is just shot out there in New Mexico. I don't feel like, I always feel like I'm on another planet. The little details they went into when R2-D2 and C-3PO are walking around in the desert, in the background, there's the dinosaur skeleton, there's the skeleton of the, maybe the Krayt Dragon, which we turns out was something they threw on the plane they're flying over there full of props. You told you the story?
No, I haven't heard this.
Oh, so that was, yeah, when they were making, I guess maybe that wasn't how Star Wars Conquered the Universe, when they're flying all their props over from England to Tunisia. They're grabbing everything they can around the sets, Shepperton, whatever they can find. And they find this big, huge skeleton, which was from a Disney movie called One of Our Dinosaurs is Missing, about a dinosaur skeleton going missing. They threw it into the plane. Plane arrives. The set, you know, the set designer, he's looking at this and is like, oh, this is cool. We'll just put this in the background there. And it could have just as easily – it wasn't in the script. And had it, you know, and now because it's in the movie, it's canon, and there's a whole life story of what this thing is and what's going on there. All those details, all the robots in the background, there's so much stuff going on there. And you pop into Star Wars like, oh, yeah, here are Jawas. What are Jawas? Don't worry. No, we're not going to come back to them.
Well, and this is one of the great things. And again, you capture a lot of that spirit when you read how Star Wars conquered the universe. In one of his interviews, I remember watching as a teenager, George Lucas says that the biggest mistake that science fiction directors make is that they're so proud of their sets and their design that they show them off. He says, show it for 10 seconds, then blow it up instantly, was his credo at the time. And of course, obviously, there's a case to be made that he very much changed his mind as he grew older. But at that time, you know, that's what it was. And that's why everything moves so fast. You're like, wait, whoa, what's that? What's that?
You know, what the jaw was, you think about this. For the Sandcrawler, they built one external practical of the treads, which were, you know, they just redressed to be like it's either at the moisture farm or it's you know, where they got stopped in the middle of the desert. They had the tracks. They had an interior that they shot with. I love the low ceiling. If you look at it, you go, oh, wow, it's got really low ceilings because they're Jawas, right?
Yeah.
And then they had a model shot. You know, that you get like there are basically three things to establish the Jawas, how they lived, whatever. And then what are the Jawas? We know they're 2 feet off the ground. They got glowing eyes. What do they look like underneath? Nah, it's not part of the story. It doesn't matter. Does not matter. What's underneath a Sheik's turban? Doesn't matter. You know, we're not going to just jump right into that.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it just was, yeah, like that. Like you just said that was it. Just throw a bunch of stuff up there. And if you look, when you watch this on HD and you look at the sets real closely, you can see, wow, this is put together pretty quickly. But, you know, they went to the effort of, you know, the prison corridor isn't a straight corridor. It's an octagonal.
Oh, and it's,
you know,
awful. It's the perspective isn't even lined up. It's like I remember being confused as a kid, like, OK, this hallway is like 30 feet long. And then there's like a barrier with a picture of the rest of the hallway, I guess. I don't like
that's,
I remember
the design of the Death Star. We can explain away all that.
I know. But what's funny is I was too busy being blown away by everything.
You know, you look at it now, you can see like I can see the paint and how this. But it doesn't matter. It moves so fast. And part of the thing that was illustrated in how Star Wars conquered the universe was how much like bringing in that Doctor Who mentality of just get it done, but
just
having
go.
A little bit more money and a little bit more time to do it.
Well, and plus also, you know, the talent that just was surrounding. You don't expect all stars to be in charge of the music and the guy writing the crawl to be, you know, one of the most influential directors in the next 30 years.
A thing I'll point out, I actually have another pick too because I'm one too. Watching Empire, when you're watching the Battle of Hoth and you look at the gun turrets, all right, you see little rust stains.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like you can get into Star Wars, how great, but even then, it's like it looked like World War II equipment, the detail that they said, oh, yeah, what happens if we're on a battleship? Well, we'll see these little things. Those little details are wonderful. My non-Star Wars pick, and it's a recommendation, I sent it to Brian, and the magic vibe. There's a magician by the name of Luber Fiedler, who is a really, really – oh, Apple Watch is telling me to stand up.
Oh.
Who's a really, really inventive guy who's created – I think he's German originally, and he's been an amazing magic creator. And I found his YouTube site where he has two videos up of his different kind of creativity there.
Which one do you want to take a peek at if we're only going to see a little bit?
Play, start with one, just see what
inside Luber Fiedler's brain.
Yeah. And it's funny because it's just, it's like you hear it's like weird sort of like breathing noises as these visual magic tricks take place.
Oh, dude, the YouTube has made possible just the most amazing transformation where it's like so many things that we thought were important suddenly aren't. Oh,
he's from the Czech Republic. Apologize.
So. Oh, so he's got like a blank white card, but then he waves a feather over it, and through it you see like a nine of hearts. It looks a little bit like a crazy green screen effect.
Yeah, he originally was like a chemical engineer or whatever, so he's created a lot of these just way out of the box thinking. And Tenyo Magic Puzzles uses a lot of they've licensed stuff from him.
By the way, he is the best person on earth. Like, there's nobody better than the man we are looking at right now. It's just this, like, obviously incredibly inventive magician. He's an older gentleman wearing an FBI snapback
and a Hollywood t-shirt
and a multicolored Hollywood t-shirt,
which I'm sure was worn like to disprove certain ideas about the filter he just put up and down over his face, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's funny that that was probably after a trip to the Magic Castle. So it's just these visual things, but it's neat to see this is a magic thinker who's sitting around creating stuff. So the link will be up on the Weird Things page. So if you want to go there and take a look at the video for our audio listeners.
Oh, my God. That was fantastic. He just showed both sides of a Three of Hearts and then tore it in half and it burst into flames like magically. That's exactly how I'd imagine a real spell to work.
Yeah.
That's great. So Luber Fiedler's YouTube.
LuberFiedler.
Yeah. He's got Tenyo is a Japanese line of magic products. They're pretty clever stuff. Every year they put out new products, and they've done several Luber Fiedler releases because he does amazing thing with optics and stuff. And they're just fun to play with. You're kind of fun to sort of do on your own. And he's got some really cool things with lenses and stuff, and it's very fascinating.
It's all optical stuff. It's all stuff that looks like it would be digital, but is not. And I know Justin, you have to go, so I'll make my pick super fast. My pick is not for you filthy Americans. My pick is for all of you fine folks in Europe. It's a little show that you ever want to get ahead in life. You want to know tips and tricks of scientists and spies, of criminals and con artists? Well, if you have National Geographic and are in the UK or in Western Europe, you should check out Hacking the System, which premieres this week. And I'm very...
Have you seen overdubbed versions?
No, I can't wait. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'd like to hear like England. Like,
what's funny, the only thing I've seen so far is somebody took a photo of their local like reviews or their local TV guide. And of course, the one photo out of the entire series that they show is from the 4th of July episode where I'm decked out in the most ridiculous stars and bars, star-spangled outfit ever. It's amazing.
Wacky Yank Brian Brushwood shows you.
And then in the review, it calls out the fact that he's like, be careful, though. He explains the exact techniques used by criminals as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's
careful because you might get American obesity watching it.
Yeah, that's my pick.
That's great. Everybody, Hacking the System. Send at Schwood all of your, especially if it is in another language. But any feedback on seeing Hacking the System in the UK, go ahead and check that out.
I can't wait.
Gentlemen, it's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.